so on and so forth. So, but that's to enlightenment, so, which is one extreme. Then we come back to ourselves, like in the world, in our daily lives, and the Buddha just taught the five precepts for lay people, which is not killing, not stealing, no sexual misconduct, no lying, and no drugs and alcohol that lead to heedlessness. And the idea is you don't just blindly follow these things, but you take them on board, and you see which ones you can do and which ones you can't do, and then you learn from your own experience. So, for example, if you drink alcohol, and you try a month or two without drinking alcohol, and see the effect it has on your mind and on your life. And then through your cause and effect, then you can start to see, oh, actually, when I follow these things, it leads to a blameless peace of mind. And that peace of mind then allows one to sit down and meditate and contemplate at ease without having difficulties arise. So the virtue or the wholesome actions aren't a peak unto themselves. They're just a strong foundation so that then the rest of the practice can happen smoothly. So then once there's a foundation, and then there's cultivation of either types of meditation, like meditation which is calming the mind, or meditation which is contemplating, where you keep your mind on a particular thing. And either of those will build strength of mind, which will then produce wisdom. And it's the wisdom that slowly allows us to overcome our old habits and tendencies and build new perceptions and train the mind so that our natural reactions become wholesome reactions. And then when we have wholesome reactions in our life, we no longer get angry, we no longer get jealous, we no longer have envy, and slowly our mind becomes lighter and lighter, and then our attachment to worldly things becomes lighter and lighter, as we have this kind of spiritual buoyancy. And it seems difficult in the world how you can relate, you know, the practices which are leading to letting go everything, but you just take on board what you can do and see, okay, well, these are my difficulties, you know, when I get angry at work, or I get angry at my spouse, or I watch too much television and that leads to slothfulness, or whatever the single issue that we have to work with. And then you just try and each day go, okay, I've got to work on this a bit better. How can I approach it? And just one thing at a time, you kind of clean your life up so it's a bit more organized. So then you can cultivate positive frames of mind. And Ajahn Chah, who's Ajahn Brahm's teacher, he said, you've just got to know the chickens in the coop. So when the chicken's outside of the coop, it's lost. So the chicken in the coop means keeping the mind in the wholesome. So to begin with, we need to learn a little bit of the teachings, because we've got to know what is wholesome and what is not wholesome. And then it doesn't matter if you practice meditation or what you do in your life, but the most important thing is you start keeping the mind in the wholesome. Because if your mind is in the wholesome, then you're not getting in trouble anymore. You're not going to get trouble in the world around you, and you're not going to fall away from your determinations and precepts and these kind of things. So you get this kind of steady blamelessness. And then when you have the steady blamelessness, then meditation is easy, because it's just kind of like getting a cloth and brightening up the mind, and then it's naturally luminous because all the causes are there. And then it's just a matter of trying to stick to the meditations and the tools that you know that work. And traditionally in Buddhism there's a commentary book called the Visuddhimagga, or in the Chinese tradition it's called the Vimuttimagga. And I studied the Vimuttimagga a little bit because it seems to be a few hundred years older, maybe about 2,000 years old. And it has 40 meditation objects. So it's like light kasina, earth, water, wind, fire, breath meditation, contemplation of death. of peace, the decay of the body, has all sorts of meditations in there. And the idea is you take up a meditation object that suits your temperament, and then you try and train in it. So in the Thai forest tradition, they typically teach anapanasati, or using a mantra, so like Buddha with the breath, or Dhammo Sangho, or one of the five body parts, or just repeating Buddha in the mind, just mental recitation. Because the idea is, first of all, in meditation, what we're actually doing is training mindfulness. So all through the day, you're trying to be mindful. So having a mantra or having a regular meditation object just means that whenever you've got a little bit of spare time, you can do a little bit more meditation. You can build your mindfulness. And then by the time you get to the end of the day and you sit down and do a bit of meditation, you've continued your mindfulness bit by bit through the day. So then you're getting a bit of continuity. So you're constantly able to watch your mind states and keep a bit of mindfulness. And then day by day, week by week, the meditation will get stronger. And if you can't do that all the time, just try like every 10 minutes or something, you say a mantra like peace. And so that's your goal. All day, once every 10 minutes, say the word peace. And when you have a spare 5 minutes, sit down and do some meditation. Anyway, that's how I practice, which is different to other people, so I thought I would just explain it to you. So that's kind of the foundation that I've kind of come from. And I have a very restless mind, so I find sometimes contemplation, a little bit of Dhamma, settles the mind. And then from that contemplation, then I find a bit of peace, and then the mind settles, and then it wants to be with the meditation object. If I was just to sit down and go, right, now you're going to be peaceful, then my mind just goes everywhere except sitting right here. But, you know, once you've done a bit of meditation in the day, and you've given up all your problems and contemplated through them and come back to kind of peace, then it's easier to meditate because there's nothing that's grabbing you. And the very simple teaching of the Buddha is to see the world as a bubble, see the world as a mirage, and then the Lord of Death won't be able to see you. So that means whatever problems you have, just see them as a bubble and a mirage. All the difficulties you have, just see them as a bubble or a mirage. If you really contemplate that, and then you say, okay, there's nothing really there. Now is not the time to worry about this. Now I can just let go of everything, have a bit of seclusion and peace, and relax. Because how often when we think about things and proliferate, we're just creating more suffering for ourselves. You know? And actually, doing a bit of meditation and getting a bit of peace is way more important than most of the things that we do. So it's a very good reflection when you sit down and you're thinking a lot. It's just to see these things as bubbles and mirages and let the mind settle and then get into the meditation. And if you're new to meditation, I found very useful just to get a guided meditation that you like a metta meditation, which is benevolence, or even reflecting on what's in this metta sutta would be a good way to settle the mind. And then maybe a guided meditation of like breath, relaxing, that kind of thing. And then, because the good thing about a guided meditation is it's taking you through the process, and you're just sitting there relaxing. And of course, if you're a regular meditator, then we've just got to show up and do the work. And learning to be kind of stick-to-itive, and you know, just like scrubbing the bathroom. You don't really want to scrub the bathroom, but once you do it, you've got a clean bathroom, it feels nice. So the same with meditation, you know. We don't always feel like we want to do it, but once we do it, put in the time, it feels good. It's the hardest work, you know. People think, oh, you're just sitting there doing nothing. But actually, taking the time and patience to meditate and look after our minds, it's very difficult. It's why the Buddha called the mind a monkey. You know, it just runs after bananas and trees and never wants to sit still. So I think we'll start with the meditation and then we can have a little chat at the end. So we'll just do 30 minutes. So just start by relaxing the body. Yeah, if you want to stretch the neck or the shoulders or rub the shoulders, it's nice way just to kind of relax a little bit. Yeah, the Buddha said, if you relax the body, relax the eyes, and naturally put down the things that you follow up to with the mind, and this is the way of setting into meditation. So we start by relaxing the feet, comfortable body, let the body move into a comfortable position, and let the tension of the feet drain out into the earth. All tension. Relax the ankles, all tingly and relaxed. Relax the lower legs, the muscles, the bone, all of the lower legs, completely at ease. Just bringing our awareness to this region. Relax the knees, all of the joint, the cartilage. Everything inside the knees, completely relaxed, like soft clouds fading away. Relax the thighs, these huge muscles and bones, everything inside the thighs, just allowing the energy to settle, relax and unwind. All tension and agitation fading away. As the thighs and the whole of the legs relax, settle, all tension draining out into the earth. inside, and then you can throw it back to the chin, the jaw, the lips, the tongue down to the root, inside the mouth, above the lips, the cheeks, all tingly and relaxed. Relax the nose and the nostrils. Relax the bags under the eyes so they begin to vanish and the eyes themselves relax. Maybe you can imagine the eyes closing again as the eyes relax deeper and deeper. So much tension is held in the eyes. We rarely notice it. Take some time to relax the eyes. Even something the Buddha recommended. Relax the temples and the forehead. All the lines on the forehead begin to fade away. The forehead becomes completely relaxed. Relax the scalp, the head, and the whole body. The whole body is good enough. Relaxed and at ease. Allow the body to do whatever it likes in the meditation, just to do it quietly and gently. We bring this kindness to the body. When the body is relaxed, and the eyes are relaxed, and there's kindness there, and it's much easier to bring our attention to our heart and mind in meditation. If we put down the past is gone, it's not coming back. So whatever is in the past now, it's not the time to think about it. There may be times where we contemplate the past, but now is not the time. So give up the past, relinquish it, let it fade away and disappear. The past is gone. Let it go. Like a bird taking flight, not heavy, free, let it be. In the future, future hasn't happened yet. Whatever we imagine and think, a thousand, a million, a billion thoughts, the future may still be something else. So put it down. Now is not the time to plan the future. Put down the burden of thinking of these two things. Put our attention in the present. Right here we have the eyes and sights, the ears and sounds, the nose and smells, the tastes and touch. The taste, the tongue and taste, the body, the bodily sensations, the mind, or heart and thoughts and emotions. So this is the present moment. These things arising and passing away, like bubbles, appearing and disappearing. We just bring kindness to the present moment. We allow the present moment to be just as it is. Easily contented and satisfied, not demanding in nature, content just to be right here. With the tingly sensation of the breath comes in and out. In breath.
sense media.
That's okay. Scientist who's enthusiastic. Contentment with the breath. I like to become aware of the tingly sensation of the breath, which I see as the relaxation. We developed in the body, how we can begin to perceive in the breath. It's like a soft, tingly sensation that's just perceivable in the in breath and out breath. And that's the awareness of relaxation, all that hard work that we did, visible in the present moment. Tuning into the peace in the breath. Enjoyment of solitude. This is welcoming the present moment. See you next time. who here is Buddhist, as opposed to just interested in meditation, just to have an understanding? Interested in meditation?
No, I'm saying I was after the Buddhist.
So, the good thing about Buddhism is you don't have to be Buddhist to practice the Buddhist teachings. Because it's just about cause and effect. So, the Buddha was pretty wise and he just said, pick one thing up at a time, you know, one teaching at a time, and then practice it and see if it's true or not. And, but you really have to practice. Because some teachings, when you practice them, you're building a staircase that leads to nowhere. So we've got to be careful what we invest our time in. So meditation is a very good thing, because we've just experienced that we've developed some peace. So now, you know, when we drive away from here, or we go back to our rooms and go back to our lives, we can reflect back on this peace, and then we have difficulty and tune into it. And then the more that we meditate, develop the peace of meditation, and something called the Brahmaviharas. Brahmaviharas is metta. So if you want to know what metta is, you just contemplate this metta sutta. And then the second one is compassion, wishing that beings may be free from suffering. Because when we don't want to suffer, so other beings don't want to suffer. So even if beings do terrible things, that's not our problem, because it's hard enough for us to look after our own minds. So we just let go of developing other people's minds until we finish the job of developing our own. With maybe the exception of our friends and our family and our children, yes, we try and put them in the right direction, but ultimately each being has to choose its own actions. So there's no point suffering over other people's actions. So instead we have compassion for them. And may beings be free from suffering. So if they're suffering, rather than us suffering over them suffering, we can have compassion for them. So they're shouting abuse at us. We can go, oh wow, they're really suffering today. Oh, I have a heart of compassion for them. It really hurts them to see you smiling, but but if you genuinely have it, afterwards they'll come back to you and they'll discuss it. They see that this person wasn't affected by their anger, that, you know, it didn't touch them. So actually compassion is a very powerful thing to develop. And then appreciative joy is the wish that may all beings not be separated from the results of their good actions. Because today, if we did this meditation, we've created some good karma. So the results of this are that now we can draw on peace. So if we then went to 10 death metal concerts in a row and started shouting abuse at our friends, we probably would have used up all of our peace and we couldn't draw on it anymore. So the idea is that we wish that beings make use of the results of their good actions. Because then we make use of those results. And it's like a domino effect and you become a better person. So even the worst person in the universe, that's subject to change. Even the right-hand side of the Buddha, Moggallana, was a Mara at one moment, which is basically like a pretty bad demon. And he's the right-hand disciple of the Buddha. And one of them killed their parents in a previous life, and they're a disciple of the Buddha. So it's like, there's no point judging other people. We don't know where other people are coming from. We don't know what actions they've done in this life, in past lives. So we just have compassion and appreciate joy. When they're suffering, we have compassion. When they've done something good, we have appreciative joy. Then we can be joyous in the fact that they've done something good and wish them good. And then finally, there's equanimity. And equanimity can only be understood through the perfection of the first three Brahmaviharas. The Brahmaviharas means the abiding of Brahma. So beings who actually got reborn in the Brahma world perfected these states to the level that then they became Brahma. Even Brahma of the great universe, who thinks he's the creator, realize that he gets reborn as well. But so these are very sublime states, and in Buddhism we use those sublime states to then come back and develop wisdom, so then we can let go of attachment. But equanimity is interesting, because once you've developed the other three, then it's this idea of covering things over with white sheets. Because a lot of our problems we have in the world are because if we have attachments and affections that we can't even temporarily put down. So the power of equanimity is that by going through the other three Brahmaviharas, then we can turn to equanimity and we can put down the whole world. We can cover everything with white sheets and then nothing matters. And then you can sit in peace without being disturbed. Because it's very hard, because we always think, you know, we have problems in our lives and people said this and this happened. And so by developing these states, then we can actually also learn to be aloof and be secluded. And then when we're aloof and secluded, we can actually benefit from developing the deeper meditations and really taste the happiness of the mind that the Buddha recommended. The Buddha recommended practicing the fast and happy path. And he said the happiness is like a shadow. So when you develop the wholesome qualities in the right way, just like your shadow never parts you, then happiness will never part you. But you have to put the causes in first. And so that's what meditation is. So never overlook even 5 minutes of meditation.
One question.
Yes, please.
Seclusion. Is that just a way of escaping what's actually happening in the world around you?
Well, seclusion, there's inner and outer seclusion. So there's a thing called wewake. And so to develop the deeper meditation, a monk needs to develop kaya wewake, so physical seclusion. So that's why the Buddha recommended to go to a foot of a tree or a lonely place, because they're places where you don't get disturbed. Because if you just go in your office lunchroom and meditate, then somebody's going to come along and tap you on the shoulder and ask you what you're doing. So the physical seclusion is useful. The A, it helps you have a temporary time where you're not dealing with other people. And it also, and then by having that time, even if you're tired, even if you're drowsy, then you actually start to enjoy seclusion. Because then when you enjoy seclusion, then you can develop meditation in seclusion, so you're not being interrupted, and then your meditations can become deeper, and then you can develop these Brahmaviharas, and then you can use these Brahmaviharas to solve your problems and do the other things in life that you usually do with great power of mind. But if you just try to do these things without developing seclusion, it's very hard. So there's kaya wewake, and then there's chitta wewake, which is the wewake of the mind. So this is much deeper in that here is the brightness of the mind like the sun, and then there's bubbles rising around it which are like the emotions and the thoughts. So you even have to have wewake from all the inner workings of the mind and let the mind be peaceful. And then you have a thing called opacity wewake. And opacity wewake for a monk is like then you worry about where you're going to get your food tomorrow and where you're going to sleep and if it's going to rain and all the problems about supporting the body. Then you have to have wewake from them as well, because otherwise you're going to be worried. So they're the three wewakes. And if you can develop those three wewakes, then you can actually be in the present moment in your solitude, and then you can develop those wholesome states. And then later on you can bring that powerful state of mind back into your daily life, and it's much more of use. It's a much sharper tool. So rather than having to have 1,000 chops in a day, you can just have 1 or 2 chops, and you get through the whole thicket. Yes. Yeah, but it's not easy. I mean, it's said that the work of the mind, the work is the hardest work there is. Because every time we go to do this work, we always find other things that are more important. So it's actually really difficult. And particularly living in the world as a householder, you know, you have families to look after, you have the jobs, you have many things to look after. So then it's just finding, how can I build mindfulness throughout the day? How can I have my heart with this action? How can I give up angry? How can I give up miserliness? So it's just using the wisdom through the day, through the precepts. And then when there's times for seclusion, you know, even if you're in a long line in the shopping centre, just go, okay, this is a time for seclusion. Nobody's going to talk to me. I have 15 minutes before I can put my shopping through the thing, so I'm just going to be peaceful. You know, I'm going to relax the body, be in the present moment, rather than being angry that, you know, there's 20 people in front of me. So it's like we can find times throughout the day to keep coming back to this idea of we're awake. And then when we actually develop meditation, we can be like the whole world disappears and we're okay with that. It's not a scary thing. It doesn't mean that you can't still live your jobs. It doesn't mean you can't do things fast or whatever, but you just bring your mind to what you're doing. Yes, please.
Yeah. So a very wealthy person could actually do that by giving all their work and instructions to someone else and then going off in retreat and these kind of things. Is that not a way of escaping for that particular person?
Yeah, I mean, it just depends on the person. Like at the time of the Buddha, there were wealthy lay people who worked in the world as well as meditated, and they still became highly attained. Because also the Buddha said there's two kinds of happiness. There's a happiness of a monk gone forth, meaning a monk or a nun gone forth can develop the blisses of the mind much easier. And the happiness of a householder is actually the search of the requisites for the monks and nuns. Because you're actually using the sweat of your brow to develop your business, to develop your wealth, which then you can give away to support the practice of people who are practicing to be enlightened. The Buddha actually said that was the highest happiness for that person. So using their wealth is giving. And then also the Buddha said give, give. So you know, you would give to the poor. So if you're super rich, you would set up something that gave really good food to poor people and ascetics, and then anybody could come along, and then you would even give with your own hand. That would be the thing to do. And anybody who came along could get whatever requisites they needed to survive. Like clothing, robes, and they could get food and medicine. And so if a rich person did that, and then maybe set up some little forests for the animals and some vets for them to get cared for as well.
You need to talk to some of their mining magnates.
So actually King Ashoka did that. He even set up little water holes for the animals and places for the animals. It's how you can bring the teachings of the Buddha with your station of existence to help people and yourself. Otherwise, if you're gonna spend all your day meditating and giving up the world and you don't really have any ties to the world, then you may as well become a monk or nun. But if you're gonna be a lay person and have responsibilities, then you just have to work things out. And the Buddha actually told one of his foremost disciples, if you go to a house and then they're running around everywhere and they've forgotten about you and you're just sitting there and you know they're talking to their kids and they're doing this and they're doing that, don't think in your mind, who's pitted these householders against me? Why aren't they feeding me? Why aren't they looking after me? And it was like, no, because the householders have many responsibilities. You know, they have many things to do. So when you're living in the world, you can't have the same level of seclusion that a monk or a nun can have, but you can use your work and things to give. And then that giving will support your precepts, and then that'll make your heart really bright, and then you can practice meditation very easily. And so you're just practicing the five precepts to the point where they're in the mind. Like even just truthfulness, to the point where it's in the mind, is very difficult. Let alone the other precepts. And so when those things are perfected, then naturally the mind will become luminous. So, and then if you wanted to do further than that, then you would do the moon observance days, or the weekends, you would do a day of the 8 precepts, where you relinquish a few more things. If you really want to deepen your practice and even go, you know, for the levels of enlightenment and that kind of thing. So you just have to, the person just has to work out where they are. But this idea that everybody has to give up everything and meditate and do nothing, no, you can be rich, you can be poor, but it's better to be somewhere in the middle, or rich, because then you're not going to suffer. So being poor is suffering. But then also you don't want to be poor in spirituality. So you want to learn through your actions what is the right and the wrong way. Because if it's all kind of patchy and you don't know what is right and wrong, then you're going to keep suffering. Learn from your own experience and hold up the teachings and see.
What if you don't recognize suffering?
Well, that's very difficult, because the suffering, the thing is, we look for immediate gratification through the senses rather than what is happiness for the mind. But as a householder, you can still enjoy the senses, the things of the senses. So what one does is you just look at each precept one at a time. So not killing, don't kill. So if you just don't kill insects and animals, that might not mean anything to you. But if you try to bring compassion to the insects and animals, and then try not to kill them, and say, oh, you know, my mother died last week, this might be her, and you genuinely mean it, because you don't know what a being's rebirth is. It could actually be your mother and you're about to squish her. So it's like when you actually contemplate these things, and then you don't, and then you're like, actually, even if it's not my mother, I don't want to be squished by some giant. Why would this insect want to be squished by a giant? Much easier to try and catch it and put it outside. If I kill it by accident, then fine, but at least then, you know, it lives. Because I want to live, I don't want to be squished by. And so you use your own wisdom to contemplate why that precept might be so. And then through that analyzing and then practicing it, then you look at your mind after a month or so of doing that precept, and then you say, how is my mind from before? Now when I was killing insects, you know, what emotions was I using when I was doing those things? You know, was there delusion there? Was there anger there? Was there irritation there? And what am I developing now? Oh, I'm developing peace, I'm developing compassion, and I'm developing letting go. In Buddhism, we're actually purifying the mind. So we actually look at what the contents of the mind is, which is very subtle. So if you just want to look at the course of things and follow the precepts, yeah, you do okay. But if you do it to the point where you understand it in the mind, then you know it for yourself, and it's personal wisdom.
Human race has a little bit of a problem not recognizing that we need everything else to live here. Once those go, we go.
Yeah.
That's the big one, I think.
Yeah, so I think if we just start with our own lives, because all it takes is people to start fully living by the Dhamma, and then other people start living by the Dhamma, and then things can change. You know, it only takes a few good leaders and a few good people, and then we can replant forests and solve our problems.
Take away technology from children.
But yeah, it's just best to start with our own lives and see how we can fix that rather than trying to fix the world. Because if we can't sustain peace and happiness in our own lives, we're trying to bring it into a world, but we don't know what it is yet. Very good, we're sorry, 8:10. What time does this class usually go to?
Okay, 8 o'clock.
Okay.
Well, smooth over.
Thank you for having me. Okay, I'll get the right side of this. Now let us chant the verses of sharing and aspiration.
Through the goodness of God, arises from my practice. May my spiritual teachers and guides of great virtue, my mother, my father, and my relatives, the sun and the moon. kings of the world. May the highest gods and evil forces, celestial beings, guardian spirits of the earth, and the Lord of death, may those who are friendly, indifferent or hostile, may all beings receive the blessings of life. May they soon attain the threefold bliss and realize the deathless, through the goodness that arises from my practice, and through this act of sharing, may all desires and attachments quickly cease, and all harmful states of mind, until I realize
everybody about meditation group. Do you want to continue coming, or with this government changing rules and whatever, are you feeling worried about coming here? Or?
Not at all.
I'm okay.
You're okay, and we have to ask the monks as well, and whether the monk will continue teaching. We don't know what's happening with the Ajahn's away, so we need to ask them. And but
sure,
the group, please keep an eye on the website.
Ajahn Chitta is here next week, so Ajahn Chitta will be doing it next week.
Oh, okay. That's fine then. Everybody not worried, then?
Sure, we'll work it out.
Okay, thank you.
Good to meditate.
Thank you. Thank you, Venerable. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you, everyone, for coming.